They're back. Kooky old Ma Fratelli and her slimeball sons have returned to wreak havoc in your neighborhood. And this time, they've not only kidnapped your Goonie buddies, but your good friend, Annie the Mermaid, as well. What a bunch of lowlifes, this Fratelli gang. This episode, we're taking one more turn with the Goonies 2. Welcome to One More Turn, a classic gaming podcast that's always free to play. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kevin.
Kevin, this week we have a returning special guest expert friend by popular request.
Oh, really?
You, listener, may know our special guest expert friend from her popular podcast, I Haven't Seen That, or perhaps her other popular podcast, The Brian Weekly, or possibly her popular appearance previously on our EVO episode. Whitney Reynolds is back. Hi, Whitney.
Hi, everybody. I'm back, and I'm really excited that you asked me back, because this is super fun.
So, Whitney, what have you been up to recently?
I have spent the last 2 days watching horror movies.
Just continually, just a lot of horror movies. What have you, how many horror movies are we
talking? I watched, since like getting off of work Friday night, I've watched 6.5 horror movies.
Oh my god. What brought this on? Why would you do this to yourself?
I feel like I'm doing, like, Halloween 1 month late, because, you know, everybody was all super spooky on Twitter for a while and had their spooky names and is watching all the scary movies, but I just wasn't feeling it. But something hit me. Some bug got into me, and I wanted to watch the movie The Descent, because I've never seen it, and I thought it would scare me a lot, but it wasn't available on Netflix, so I started watching other stuff. And then it just spiraled out of control.
Can you foresee this as being a common trend? Like, are you going to be celebrating, are you going to be listening to Alice's Restaurant in December?
I know that's like a tradition for some people. Is that like, is that a Thanksgiving thing? I've never done that.
That's a Thanksgiving thing.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I don't think
a wonderful Thanksgiving gift that your local radio station gives to the world.
I don't think I've ever listened to Alice's Restaurant, period. I haven't heard that.
Hang up right now.
I had not heard Alice's Restaurant until someone in, like, a college professor put it on and said, "Hey, everyone knows what this means. You didn't prepare material for today's class?"
I, too, was late to the Alice's Restaurant game, introduced to it by my wife, Stephanie. She has it. I think we have it saved on an MP3 now, and we specifically listen to it because I go home to Orange County every holiday, specifically listen to it from the drive to from her parents' place to my parents' place. Aww. Before Thanksgiving dinner.
That's like a long song, isn't it? It's like a modern day epic. It is Beowulf in song form.
That's all I really know about it, is that it's like 20 minutes long. And guys, I'm a Decemberist fan. I'm primed for that kind of thing.
Is there anything that's decidedly Thanksgiving about the song?
They go to have Thanksgiving dinner at Alice's restaurant.
Oh.
It's around Thanksgiving time, and they're like going to have dinner. They're a traveling group of people, and they're like, "Hey, it's Thanksgiving. Like, we should have dinner somewhere." And they go to her place, and she's very helpful. Alice, she's such a sweet old lady.
Well, and no spoilers.
And then it turns into a romp about going to jail and the Vietnam War for some reason.
Is the purpose of this song just to break away from the monopoly that Christmas holds on all holiday songs?
Oh, because Halloween has songs. You know, you got you got Ghostbusters, you got the Monster Mash, you got a
Thriller.
There we go.
Thriller. But then, yeah, you just have from November 1st to December 25th, or actually December 1st, you just have there's a void there of holiday-themed music.
The only reason why we hear Christmas carols so early is because there's nothing else to listen to.
I think the radio station in SoCal used to play it 24 hours. I think it was like Thanksgiving Day, play it for 24 hours. So like you could just pop it on and just listen to Guthrie go all crazy with Alice, you know?
Oh,
I promise you guys, since I'm doing this, will be my third year doing Thanksgiving solo, where I don't go anywhere, I don't have anyone over, I just do it by myself, and it's literally the best thing. But I promise you, this year I will listen to Alice's Restaurant and then probably watch horror movies.
So do you typically watch a lot of horror movies?
I go through little like phases of it. I love scary movies and scary games, and When I was watching last night, I was like, there was nothing that was really. I ended all the movies I watched. I watched The Pact. I watched Absentia. I watched Resolution. I did watch The Descent, which was went from being the scariest movie I'd ever seen to the stupidest. I watched The Orphanage, and then I watched Mama, and then I watched half of Cabin in the Woods. But I've seen that like six times, so I went to bed.
What made The Descent? What triggered the switch from the scariest movie to the stupidest?
Well, it's a movie about caving, and caving is terrifying. Don't go in a cave. No one go in a cave. Why are you going in a cave?
You're referring to spelunking, right?
Yes.
Like a spelunky situation. Okay.
Oh, okay. Like Daylight, starring Sylvester Stallone.
You love Sylvester Stallone.
Or Cliffhanger, starring Sylvester Stallone.
That's the opposite of a cave.
Or Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. I haven't seen that. I'm sure it's about a cave. But it goes from being, like, it's just, like, real tension of this is a thing that could really happen, six women trapped in a cave, too, and now they're dumb monsters. Now they're being attacked by golems, and it's stupid. You don't need monsters to make a cave scary. You just made it, then it made it stupid, and I was like, I don't care anymore, because this is no longer a real thing that's terrifying. You're just being attacked by sightless monsters and whatever.
Right, was that an old Alfred Hitchcock-ism? Or adage about how it's often scarier to display the potential of something dangerous rather than just strictly showing it. And in the purposes of caves, it's just darkness. That's all there is you are trapped. There is this claustrophobia to it, and anything could be down there. Much like the bottom of the ocean is just full of weird stuff that we don't really know about. And so everything could have huge teeth, or everything could be like Jigglypuffs and sunshine. Well, probably not sunshine.
In a cave, you can just die down there in darkness. The darkest that anything could ever be. You don't need to put monsters on top of that.
Especially if you're with six people. I would say, even with five of my closest friends, I can imagine things getting very tense very quickly. And if a monster movie's taught me anything, it's that people are the real monsters.
Yes, it's true. Yeah, when I was watching that movie, I was like, I was on the verge of, I think I might have to turn this off because I am literally, like, sweating because I'm, like, on the verge of a panic attack. And then, like, immediately afterward, it went to Stupid Monsters. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll go start dinner.
I get really frustrated often from that phenomenon of something there's a really fascinating subject that's being explored in the first half of a movie, and then they just completely ruin it, either for the purposes of, oh yeah, we have to actually appeal to an audience here to make money on this. The movie that comes to mind is Splice for me.
Oh.
That was an Adrian Brody movie about
splices.
Like DNA splicing. And the first half of it is very fascinating. It is in a way like a modern retelling of Frankenstein, but then it seems like it's filmed by someone who never read the original Frankenstein. We're like, oh yeah, Frankenstein goes on a rampage and kills everyone, right? And that's the horror. No, that's not at all what Frankenstein's about.
It's an unfortunate trend in horror movies to have the last half just be like mayhem and blood, and then it's just and that's not that scary to me.
So it sounds like you like a suspense.
I like a suspense. I like a creeping dread. One of the scariest movies I've ever seen and scariest things I've ever read was 1408.
What is 1408?
Is that the Jim Carrey movie?
It's a Stephen King short story, and it became a John Cusack movie, and it's one of my favorite film genres, which is John Cusack just freaking out and yelling, which also is the movie 2012 is full of that. John Cusack just going, ah! So movies with number titles starring John Cusack, highly recommended by Whitney Industries. But it's just, you know, him in a hotel room while things just go wrong and weird and it just messes with your brain and it's terrifying.
Awesome. We're going to be talking, were you talking about relationships with movies and games in a second with Goonies 2. So for now, Kevin?
We'll be right back on One More Turn.
Yeah, there it is. The handoff.
Yeah.
Welcome back to One More Turn, where we're talking The Goonies 2. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kevin.
I'm Whitney.
So Whitney, Jim, we are talking Goonies 2. Not the recently announced Goonies 2 that supposedly, I guess, they're making a Goonies 2 movie, you know, nearly 30 years after the fact.
Not a good idea.
But in fact, Goonies 2, the Konami video game, which follows the Goonies 1 video game in 86 and the film of 85. I don't know why there's a Goonies 2 video game. I understand why there's a Goonies video game. I don't understand why there's a sequel.
Actually, I had a thought about this, that I was wondering if this was a video game sequel to a movie. Like, they weren't going to film a sequel to it, but they could make a sequel to it as a video game. And I thought that was a fascinating concept, and I'm kind of wondering why they didn't do that more. Like, why that wasn't a thing that just occurred randomly.
Instead of, like, a direct-to-video release, just have, like, the video game sequel?
Right, because then you wouldn't have to pay actors.
You've never heard my theory about how the Matrix movies ended in order to lead to the Matrix Universe MMO.
That was the first thing I thought of. There was that terrible tie-in game that was part of the canon with the Matrix.
There was a Matrix MMO that was awful and nobody played. And to me, I felt like they rewrote the ending of the Matrix to lead into a garbage MMO.
Or was it Enter the Matrix, or was that was a separate game, right?
And there was Enter the Matrix, but that was separate. Yeah,
and that's bad. That's funny. That game was really glitchy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, that makes sense, right?
I mean, you are the one. I mean, you are. Well, you're not Neo in that one. You're Jada Pinkett Smith.
Like, it's totally planned. It's totally planned. All those clipping through a wall—that's totally intentional.
So the Goonies 2 came out in 87, and right about this time, you got your Zelda 2. So, you know, it was competing with the sequel. Contra, Metal Gear.
Some real high-tier games there.
Yeah. Zelda 2. Shadowgate actually came out after Goonies 2, which is kind of strange because people compare Goonies 2 and they say, hey, there's a Shadowgate portion.
Right. It's like Metroid and Shadowgate, and this actually this one actually came before both
what?
Of them.
No, I don't think it came before Metroid. Metroid's 85. I know Gertzman wants to believe it.
You referenced it. Jeff Gerstmann had a video where he was put out a little encyclopedia article about the Goonies 2. That was one thing that he mentions. Like, in an alternate universe, we could be calling that genre Goonivania.
First off, I have a lot of problems with the word Metroidvania, let alone Goonivania. But I want to get right into it. Whitney?
Yeah.
This is the second game you've picked that has a mermaid in it. Now, I'm sensing a theme.
Oh my god, I didn't realize.
With your game picks. Why did you pick Goonies 2 for us to play on your second go through here?
Because I would say Goonies 2 is the first game I ever loved. And it's kind of the first game, like, it's the first Nintendo game I remember playing. I think the first, like, video games I remember playing, because we had a Texas Instruments console kind of thing where I played, like, Hunt the Wumpus and stuff. But when we got a Nintendo.
What? You say that so casually.
We never had an Atari or a ColecoVision. We had this Texas Instruments thing that had joysticks and a keyboard, and it had Hunt the Wumpus and...
What is that? Hunt the Wumpus?
You guys don't know about...
Hug or hump?
Hunt! Hunt the Wumpus.
Oh, hunt. Okay, sorry.
What's a Wumpus?
It's a big red thing, I think. I haven't, you know, played it since I was 3.
There's a magic card based on that, I believe. Called the Hunted Wumpus, and I always wonder, like, what is a Wumpus?
Oh my gosh, well, it's a game I played when I was, like, 4.
On some weird ancestor of the TI-83.
Yeah, I think it was a TI-81, and nobody's ever heard of it, and no one has ever had it. It was just some strange Texas Instruments console thing. But then we got a Nintendo, and I have an older brother who's 5 years older than me, so that was, you know, his thing, is he had the Nintendo. And somehow we got Goonies 2, and that was, you know, I was, let's see, this was in 87, we probably got it in around then, so I was like 5 or 6, and that was, you know, the first game I really remember playing a lot and loving a lot, and I played it so much that my mean older brother, at one point, he hid the game and told me that he had sold it to someone.
Oh no!
But
my brother did that to me once, too. It's awful.
But then he put it under the Christmas tree.
Aww.
So that was also, it was the first Christmas gift I got from my brother. It was him returning the game I loved when he was a meanie.
That's sort of endearing in a torturous way.
Older brothers, man. Older brothers.
Yeah. My older brother once took my favorite game and wiped it clean, took a magnet to it and destroyed it so that I would never play it again.
Yeah. That is way crueler.
Yeah, because he said I was playing it too much.
In what sort of twisted world does that sense of justice make sense?
I don't know. I don't know, but if you want to see a 6-year-old cry, that's how you do it.
Yeah, this is becoming the One More Turn Classic Gaming Podcast and Older Brother Support Group.
He brought, my brother probably wanted me to stop playing Goonies 2 so he could play Castlevania.
The original or Simon's Quest?
The original.
Because if it was Simon's Quest, I think that would have been a grave mistake.
A grave mistake, you say? Get it? Cause
it's a terrible night for such a joke.
So this was my actual first playthrough of Goonies 2. I actually played the... this is what I got to explain. Goonies is incredibly confusing in video game form to me in a lot of ways. One, the original Goonies for game consoles did not come out for game consoles. It came out in arcades only, if you remember those Nintendo Play 10 things.
Oh, boy, I don't.
It was like an arcade machine where you could play any Nintendo game. Wow. You put in a quarter and you play it for like 5 minutes. But there was a Commodore 64 version that I did play that was not like this at all. It was very different. And then Goonies 2 came out, and everyone was confused because there was no Goonies 2 the movie. It was like a sequel to a game that was never released, really, in the U.S.
Yeah, I always assumed it was supposed to be a sequel to the movie, just one that didn't make any sense.
Was the movie The Goonies big in Japan?
I don't know.
Or, like, did they get a game just called The Goonies, and everyone's like, what is this?
Maybe Data was less horrible in Japanese.
Yeah, maybe he's less racist.
Less of a racist caricature. Maybe he was the hero of the film. Maybe they dubbed him to be...
Yeah.
Oh, do you mean like in the original Godzilla, how when it was released, how the movie was released in America, they completely and literally whitewashed the movie?
Right.
And the lead just completely randomly and removing the entire like nuclear subplot?
Yes.
But for the Goonies... Okay, so I'm gonna have a million questions for both of you, the Goonie experts, because this is our merger cast. This is our We Are the World in podcast form. Because for the Goonies, I haven't seen that,
and that's the name of my podcast. I've been thinking about getting a little xylophone, so whenever anybody says I haven't seen that, I can go ding.
Oh, it's the Roderick on the line bell.
I haven't seen that. Ding! So since it's the catchphrase, so you can hear the little trademark sound. Well, buddy.
So that way you can just have like an audio parser just going through all podcasts. And so until if you hear that, you're like, oh, that's $5 rolling in.
You should probably talk to the Nabisco people because they might have some druthers about you having a ding.
Well, so first of all, I get this a lot, is when I tell people that I haven't seen The Goonies, I get that, like, wide-eyed...
Yeah. You haven't seen The Goonies?
Walk back in their chair, you haven't seen The Goonies? And I hit this point now where I'm almost wearing that as a badge of honor, because the question I always have with this sort of, with that sort of reaction is, am I too late? Am I too late for
yes.
The Goonies?
That
was fast.
Yeah. You're extremely you too late for the Goonies because it was one of my favorite movies as a kid, and it's a movie you need to see when you're a child because my mom had talked about, you know, when I was older, and I think I finally got Goonies on DVD, and she was like, oh god, I hated that movie when you were a kid because it's just nothing but an hour and a half of children screaming because it's a cast of, you know, they're all like, you know, 11-year-olds.
Well, Josh Brolin's pretty mature looking, even in that movie.
Isn't that just Star Wars Episode 1?
Oh, no, it's more annoying than that. It's a lot of high-pitched voices, and I tried to watch it as an adult, and I was like, oh, yeah, she was right. This is very annoying, and these kids are dumb. Yeah.
Great, I'm watching an American release of Evangelion. It's just kids screaming.
No, that would be, oh, poor Sean Astin as Shinji.
It'd be like if any of us tried to watch The Little Rascals now.
Or Sandlot.
I'm gonna go against you on that one.
I haven't seen that.
Ding!
Yeah, it's just, you see a bunch of precocious children. One of them is a racist caricature.
The other one, it's a fat kid that they make fun of all the time. And then there's Sloth.
So, you say this is incredibly problematic by today's standards.
Yeah, it's a skip it. Give it a miss.
How does the original movie relate to the Goonies 2, or does it?
Barely.
It's the thinnest possible, like,
It feels like fanfic, right? It feels like fanfic.
It feels like what if we fanfic, took the Fratellis? It's fanfic where you missed like the first 17 chapters. They were taken off of Archive of Our Own, and you're just like, figure it out, buddy.
Yeah, it makes no sense because as much as of a children's fantasy, the movie The Goonies is, there are no mermaids in The Goonies. Like it is it.
I wanted to ask about that.
Yeah, Jim, do you know the
it
plot?
Is a plot? Like everything in The Goonies is plausible. Like it. Like it's bullshit, but it like could happen. Like you like, okay, I could see that happening. I could see C-3PO on the back of a pirate ship at the end of the movie.
I had no idea.
You really look hard
because it's kind of a is it related to Spielberg in some way? Is he connected in?
It's the most 80s movie. I mean, Spielberg did a draft of it. Richard Donner directed it. Sean Astin is in it. So Corey Feldman is also in it. Yeah.
He was. I always liked him because he was like kind of bad boy, and he said cusses and stuff. Although I always watched. I had like the version that was taped when I was watching it over. We had a version I think was taped off of TV, so it had a lot of the various cusses censored. There's a couple of terribly dirty words, but I didn't really see them until I watched it later, and I was like, oh.
Do they have creative dubs over them?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was though.
Not all of them. I think oh shit, which is the big. Funny part of the movie, the big cuss when they're all flying out of a waterfall. There's one just guy goes yells, "Oh shit!" and like, I think it's "Oh shoot" now or "Oh darn."
No, that's not that wildly creative. It's no like, I'm tired of these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane.
This is what happens when you have fun with a stranger in the Alps.
I get introduced to this game, and there's just some like angry mobsters telling me they kidnapped a mermaid. Like, what is going on?
And this is my 5-year-old brain just like accepted this. I'm like, okay, sure, this connects somehow. I'm like, yeah, okay, we got to find a mermaid because I think like so many Nintendo games just have that very thin premise, and you're just like, I'm going for it. All right, whatever. Do we need a return to that in today's games to have more of a all right? This is it. Just do it.
This is the world we're throwing you into, where we've gone from, as you said, a believable, a ridiculous but somewhat believable movie, like kind of a cartoonified version of a live-action film, and instead we're going to throw in mobsters that are shooting bow and arrows at children.
Why
and
not?
Dragons and skeleton gargoyles.
And going into a house and... There's just an endless series of doors and catacombs until there's like a waterfall and pits full of spikes and everybody fights with a yo-yo.
By the way, we're gonna, like, you make it sound like these mob bosses are somehow like not being attacked themselves. I mean, they arm Mikey in this game with a spear, a harpoon gun, and Molotov cocktails.
Can you even picture Sean Astin throwing a bomb or a Molotov cocktail? He's so sweet. Samwise, no.
That's what I always wonder about. I guess this comes up in a lot of licensed platformers, like where it's kind of clear that they make the game before they attach the license to it. So like, so it doesn't make just any sense in context to the actual series itself about like, why would they have, you know, like, why would there be like fantasy monsters in this? Or I feel like I need to go back to this over and over. Why is a mermaid our best friend? Although as I would think, that's kind of cool. Like, that's kind of an awesome thing.
If you met a mermaid, I mean, well, I did. I was watching Cabin in the Woods last night. That was my half of a horror movie. And that, if you've seen the merman in that, not so friendly.
Well, right. That is like the opposite parts fish and opposite parts human.
It's like the Goonies remix where at the end, instead of Annie the mermaid, it's the merman from Cabin in the Woods. And
Andy the merman.
And he eats your face.
Oh, no. I get reverse centaur.
No, no. Gross.
We'll be right back on One More Turn.
Welcome back to One More Turn, and we're talking The Goonies 2. I'm Jim.
And I'm Kevin.
I'm still Whitney.
So Whitney and Jim, I'm confused. There's a lot of confusion in this game. So I actually, Jim, when you sent
seemed
me
all clear to me.
When you sent me the text that was like, "Hey, we're playing Goonies 2," I made the mistake and I started playing Goonies 1, PlayStation 10 version that nobody's ever played, and that would actually make sense. It follows the story of the Goonies.
That's what I was thinking, right? That, like the Goonies, the movie, just from what I recognize of it, seems to align itself perfectly for like an 80, like a late 80s Nintendo platformer, right?
Yeah.
There's caves, there's pirates, there's puzzles and booby traps and stuff.
And that version, the arcade version, lines up with that perfectly, or nearly perfectly. You know, obvious liberties are made. like kicking rats. You know, that's a big part of the first Goonies game, is kicking, you kick a lot of rats for some reason.
Wow.
But there was other things about this that really confused me, like the hammer versus the hammer v sunglasses and how to find things. Like, sometimes you have to hit things with a hammer to find them. Sometimes you gotta put your special glasses on to find
sometimes you
special doors and whatnot.
Punch with a fist. Because the format of the game, most of it is the Metroidvania style, where you're, you know, jumping around and hitting things with your yo-yo. That's your primary, the primary instrument of destruction is your yo-yo. And I think you have some yo-yo power-ups you can get. And then there's like a slingshot and a boomerang. Boomerang, slow moving, but it gets you two hits.
Oh, but be careful with it on the bridge or you might lose it. Thank you, wise old man.
But then you go...
No, that was in the chest. That was like those weird little hints that come in chest, like in these safes in the walls.
Yeah, you go into these rooms and it turns into this Shadowgate-y thing where, you know, you have, it's like, use fist, use hammer, use glasses. And I think when I was a kid, like, I had no... I think this is where I went in my first like pixel hunt, because I was like, I'm just gonna hit every quadrant and try to figure out what do I need to do in this room. So I'm just gonna try everything on every inch until something happens. I think I was a Nintendo Power subscriber from issue one.
Good job.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Good job.
That was Mario 2,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was. Although I guess it was my brother, but also me, and I think Goonies was there had to have been some Goonies coverage, because otherwise I think there's stuff in there I never ever would have figured out.
Like, for example, the Eskimo mystic person.
Yeah, you go into a room and there's an Eskimo. I hope it's in the ice level. Is there an ice level?
Right, named Eskimo.
Yeah, but you have to like strike that person over and over again in order to like get some yo-yo.
The candlers.
Yeah, a candle, that's it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and then you use the candle and that reveals like a treasure chest, and it makes no sense.
Is there an indication as to whether there is something in a given room, or do you really just have to trial and error an entire room?
I'm pretty sure that there's nothing. There is, yeah, you just have to try, and there's a lot of these rooms, and also like it, some of them you can like move from one room to another, like, oh right, you have to get a ladder at one point, and that lets you go up in a hole in the ceiling of one, and then there's another room that you have to figure out what to do in.
Yeah, so yeah, I agree. There was a design thing that I thought was cool, which was but then later they did something that made no sense. So you have these rooms you can go into other worlds. Like instead of having like Metroid have to backtrack and go back to an elevator to another world part of the game, you can just basically take this like back door and these like secret passage to these other worlds, to these other parts of this universe. But then inexplicably, they also add warp zones that do the exact same thing.
It's interesting that you see these rooms as like portals or something, because I had always just imagined it as you are literally like stepping through the vestibule and it's just literally on the other side. Like on one side, it's like, it's like lava. And then, you know, you step through a small hallway. And the architecture of the basement of the Fratelli's house is just literally full of ice wizards.
Yeah. It's like in Batman when he goes into the Batcave. It's just like a swinging wall, you know? And you like spin one half is the manor and one half's the cave, you know?
Yeah, and then you just have like the entire Spelunky dungeon underneath there.
Is Spelunky a recent game or
originally 2010?
Okay, but like, yeah, so, you know, not in the 80s. Because I haven't played that, but
ding. Yeah, I was wondering about the specifically about striking someone several times to solve a puzzle. What kind of person is Mikey? Is Mikey the kind of person that just assaults strangers?
Well, see, I'm thinking that, you know, in the movie, you know, the Goonies, they're kind of all, you know, misfits and they're bullied, and you've got Josh Brolin and his gang of bullies. But maybe, you know, as time goes on, because, you know, since they do discover all of this treasure at the end of the movie and they become, you know, wealthy children, that they found all this gold, all this filthy lucre that they, that, you know, now he's gone, you know, a little mad with his privilege. And now he can just buy and sell you and feels no, he's, you know, he's got an anger inside him from when he was picked on. And, you know, since he was, you know, too small to play football, and now he's going to show you all by punching a fish man over and over and over again while he says, ouch, what do you do?
But then he grows up to be Rudy. So at some point, he learns that humbleness and meekness again.
And then he becomes Samwise Gamgee. And
I think what I'm hearing right now is that there already is a sequel to The Goonies, and it's called Wolf of Wall Street. Is you just have like these punk kids just going around with too much money and no maturity, and they're just like, well, what do you think is going to happen?
They have literal bags of gold.
Just a disaster.
They're laden with doubloons.
This is why an 8-year-old shouldn't be Scrooge McDuck.
Although I guess the DuckTales game does have its similarities.
I know. I mean, Ma Barker and the, or Ma, whatever, Ma and the Beagle Boys is basically the Fratellis, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Fratellis. It's Ma Beagle and the Beagle Boys.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, here's the other thing that is crazy to me. Because in the Goonies, there's like an actual villain, and it's not really the Fratellis. It is the Fratellis, but it's also the evil bankers that are going to take over everyone's... Jim, you haven't seen it, so there's actual evil bankers in the Goonies movie.
Well, right. I mean, it's a movie that exists in a world. So
it's a movie from the 80s, so... Bankers are definitely going to come and try to take everything.
So, but the whole reason, then that spurs their whole adventure in the Goonies. Like, hey, we need to save the Goondocks. Real term in the movie. The Goondocks. That's why they go treasure hunting, is to save their home.
Because they find a treasure map in Mikey's attic.
It's such a Scooby-Doo plotline.
But so you're saying, Whitney, is even after that hardship of like being poor and having to save his family, even then, he still becomes a Wolf of Wall Street guy, huh?
Yeah,
he
didn't get enough, you know, support. Maybe he's bitter because he didn't really get the girl, because let's admit it, she's like older than him, and it's weird because he's like 12.
Oh, it's a princess bubblegum kind of scenario.
A little bit, yeah.
She's immortal.
So then now, because he didn't get the girl in the first one, he's chasing this mermaid.
I don't...
Mm-hmm. But they're already really good friends. It says so in the manual.
Well, maybe he's...
But he's got to prove himself.
Yeah, so he can get out of the mermaid friend zone. Punch the walls until you escape the mermaid friend zone. Dunk, dunk.
We call that the deep end. Dunk.
Oh!
A thing I love about... talking about DuckTales made me think of it, is the music in this game is great. I was... Before we were recording this, while I was waiting, I just put on a playlist of Goonies 2 music, and I was like, this is wonderful. It's like really good, like 8-bit jams, and especially because they have a version of the Cyndi Lauper song that was made for the movie, which is called Good Enough, full title, The Goonies Are Good Enough, and the Nintendo version of it is so great, and I heard it, and I listened to it, and it was just like, oh my god, I'm immediately 6 years old again, and sitting in front of my Nintendo and trying to figure out how the hell this game works. I did beat it. I know I did beat it. I somehow figured it out after, back in those days when you would spend like an entire year trying to figure out how to beat a game.
Yeah, that's one thing I found, is there is a lot of trial and error in the game, and the game is, it's pretty tough. Like there's birds and bats, which of course are the plague of any NES style platformers. Anything that hits you in the air is just the worst thing imaginable. It's history's greatest monster, birds. Is there a game over in this game? Or does it just bring you back to an area you were previously?
I think you can... You have lives. There's a number of lives.
Yeah. So I could fill you in on this. So one, Goonies 1, the arcade game, when you die, you have to start over, which is terrible. So Goonies 2...
Well, it's an arcade game, so yeah. It's trying to take your money.
Goonies 2, you get a password provided by Ma Fratelli.
But why is she telling you a password?
Yeah. And that password, it starts you over at the beginning, but you get all your whatever power-ups you earned.
Oh, so it's like automatically new game pluses you even if you lose.
Yeah.
Like
you have a setback, but it's not like a complete terrible ruination of all your 6-year-old dreams.
Right. And because it is an old-timey open world game, you can recover a lot of the ground that you've made pretty easily. And that's one thing that I noticed is This game has a built-in map. How many games from that era had a built-in map to it? Like, Metroid sure didn't. Granted, no. It doesn't mark off, like, areas you've been, which is kind of problematic, but it has, like, there are multiple maps in the game, and it displays them. Like, this is crazy for a game from, like, 1987.
Yeah. Not only a map, but you have a magic detector, which tells you where to go.
Yeah, so there it is. We have the Goonies as the influence to all games with location-based objectives. Skyrim influenced by the Goonies 2. Real quick, can I ask about Konami's brutal self-promotion in this
game? Konami Man!
Yeah, so there's Konami Man, who is a strange superhero representing Konami with a big K on his chest, who just appears in random places as in, I will refill your energy. Like, this is great, Konami Man. I've not heard of you before, and it's weird that you're stepping into this already existing franchise. But also, don't hit him. That's one lesson that I've learned. You don't punch Konami Man.
Definitely never learned that. I never absorbed that lesson when I was playing this as a kid. I was just like, I'll just punch everyone. I remember the only actual Goonie, because you have to beat the game, you have to find keys, which are randomly dropped by whatever you're hitting with your yo-yo, that unlock jail cells where your Goonies are. And the only, like, they're not very, like, this isn't clearly Corey Feldman or anything, but I definitely remember the one that was, you know, the Josh Brolin bully, because he's, like, wearing, you know, 8-bit varsity jacket. And I punched him. I punched him a lot.
Yeah, he deserved it. So, Jim, I have an answer for you. Konami Man appeared in multiple Konami games.
Right, he appears in the Castlevania games, I believe.
It's like a thing. Like, it's an inexplicable thing. Like, let's just shoehorn this brand mascot in every game.
Yeah, the Konami version of Pepsi Man just appearing into this just to help you out.
Yeah.
Also, I think at the end of the game, when there's this, is it the reporter? I think it may even be Andy the Mermaid that says this, where they just shout, hurrah for Konami and the Goonies. You're not even the first billing.
Well, you wouldn't have gotten anywhere without Konami, would you?
There wouldn't have been a problem without Konami either.
They put us into this situation. Shouldn't the Fratellis be behind bars? How did they get out?
Yeah, why aren't they behind bars? I thought they
were. Did they break out? All of them? All three? Maybe they wouldn't put Ma Fratelli in jail. They were like, oh, she's an old lady. And someone will eventually...
Or she's rich.
They'll throw her from the train eventually.
The beginning intro video is like, oh, we're going to get... We kidnapped all your friends and your mermaid as revenge for sending us to jail. You must not have been in jail that long, or like they just made a plea bargain, or maybe they're just out on bail. I don't know
the cops in this town suck, because like they just are at the exact same shack that they were hiding out before. You would think the police would check there first.
Maybe the police got in and saw the first, you know, river of lava and were like, never mind, we're going to let those dumb kids handle this one.
Yeah. Yeah, kids understand lava. They're all playing Minecraft these days.
Kids are really, you know, have a lot of familiarity with lava due to how often the floor becomes lava. Mikey's been training for years. His yo-yo tricks. It's the yo-yo that... I mean, I guess I probably have been hit with a yo-yo in my life. Have you guys? Have you ever been hit with a yo-yo?
I have been hit with a yo-yo, usually self-inflicted.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to try to do a trick. Ow, I hit myself in the head with a yo-yo. Not quite as bad as getting hit in the head with a nunchuck, but...
Oh, that seems rough.
I feel like if this had come out like 2 years later, Mikey definitely would have had nunchucks. It would have been a Mikey convergence.
Now, come to think of it, I think there was the Duncan Butterfly, which was the Inside Out yo-yo. That thing only existed to inflict pain on your own hand, because like I said, it wasn't rounded; it was inverted. Yeah. So that you'd get struck by the two ends of it every time it snapped back into your hand. Also, because it was Duncan and not a Yo-Mega yo-yo, which of course everyone knows was the superior yo-yo of the 90s.
Yeah, keep going.
What are some of your sickest tricks? Your sickest yo-yo tricks? Yeah.
Well, of course, walk the dog is a basic. It's a basic one.
I do a lot of the fly cat. You ever do that one? Circle the rodeo. Uh-huh.
Circle the rodeo is classic. Or the pendulum.
Okay.
The nighttime slow jam.
The Pearl Jam?
The nighttime slow jam. I think you don't actually know anything about yo-yos. Guys, I can make up fake yo-yo tricks all day.
The Wampus?
The Hump the Wampus? No, no, it's when it's a yo-yo, it's a Hump the Wampus.
Final thoughts, Goonies 2. Kevin, what did you feel going back to the Goonies 2? How do you feel now?
I'm very confused. I think what sets the tone for the confusion for me was the box art, which has like 15 pictures of Mikey on it in a bunch of different clothing. And then Ma Fratelli holding a snow globe with a mermaid in it. I saw that and I was like, this is not the Goonies. Like, they're trying to make it look like Star Wars or some epic fantasy thing. And it's like,
he does kind of look like Mark Hamill.
Yeah, he looks more like a Luke Skywalker than he does a Sean Astin.
That's what I'm saying. They tried to make it look Star Wars. Instead, it looks, for some reason, a mermaid. The mermaid in the glass jar really confused me.
I think as a kid, I absorbed that the cover art as thinking that maybe Annie the mermaid was super tiny.
I think she is.
Like, I think she's life size.
If you look at the cell that she's in. I mean, I guess kind of the jail cells, it may just be due to the perspective in there. They all look really small.
I mean, we don't actually know how big mermaids are in real life. I mean, we can only assume. I mean, you assume that they might have like a regular human-sized torso, but they, mm-hmm. I mean, it might be like...
They could be clownfish.
They could be super tiny, or they could be super huge. It could be like, you've got like an orca behind, and then...
Megalodon.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It could be like, imagine like a mermaid with like a torso the size of Andre the Giant's torso.
Orca princess! I feel like every time we have you on, Whitney, I scribble in my notes about something that I need to write about or some game that I need to make. I still have a page dedicated to my notebook that just has the scrawl Mermaid Dracula on it. Now this time I have Orca princess.
I didn't realize mermaids were so deeply part of my brand.
You took a note from Konami, I guess. I guess the Konami thing kind of really...
imprinted on me.
Yeah, so mostly confusion on my part when I'm playing this, just because I think I've seen the original Goonies so many damn times that I think that's why I'm confused. It just doesn't jive well with the movie at all. Oh, that's what I was going to say. Annie the Mermaid is, I would assume, named after Ma Fratella, who's in real life Anne Ramsey. So there you go. Fun fact for you.
Why not assume that?
Wait, hold on. So are you saying that that Ma Fratelli and Mermaid Annie are different parts of the same character? They're different aspects of her.
I'm just saying it's named after her.
No, I think that's what you were going with, is that Ma Fratelli is like this kind of ruthless, mm-hmm. like this ruthless leader type,
mm-hmm.
who like gets the job done, doesn't make a lot of friends along the way, because everyone's being stepped on to get to her level of threatening mob boss. But yet, there's also this...
there's a gentle side. There's a sweet side to her.
Trapped inside of this snow, of this personal snow globe.
It's her heart, you're saying.
Right!
That Annie is the heart of Ma Fratelli.
It's a metaphor, this box art, of Ma Fratelli ripping her snow globe heart out of her chest and presenting it to you. It has a mermaid in it.
And that's what you're doing.
She doesn't need it anymore.
You're freeing that more personal, this more whimsical element to Ma Fratelli. The entire purpose of this game is mm-hmm. to rescue her from herself.
That's why she gives you the passwords.
We've solved it. We have solved the puzzle box that is the Goonies 2.
And your face, one-eyed Willy.
So Whitney, how do you feel going back to Goonies 2?
It's, I think playing this as an adult, it would be less perplexing than all the hours I spent, you know, punching things. And it's a fun game. Like, playing it, it's kind of, you know, that classic 80s, you know, open world vania madness. And it's still a fun game. And it's still, like, it will always have, like, the softest space in my heart. And in my mermaid-filled heart, I keep my mermaid snow globe inside me where it belongs.
But you know how to release it when need be.
Yeah. Yeah, I just listen to Cyndi Lauper and it's right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there.
And you know then that you're good enough. For you, you're good enough.
I am good. I'm good enough, and enough is spelled N-U-E-N-U-F-F.
I think that's what our summary of this episode is. The Goonies 2 are good enough.
And apparently they never die, because there was a sequel coming out 30 years later, inexplicably.
Oh, that's not going to be good. Unless, I'm wondering, is it going to be a... like a Girl Meets World kind of thing where it's all the Goonie children who are.
God, I hope so.
Did their parents run out of money again?
I mean, it is time for that, right? I mean, bankers are the enemy again.
Yeah. Bankers have always been the enemy.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the sequel to The Wolf of Wall Street.
There it is. There it is. The wolves of Wall Street have been released from jail and are now living on top of a giant dungeon vault that goes to the center of the earth.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And they're actually harnessing the earth's core as a source of energy that they're then selling.
Well, that actually sounds like a good idea. That sounds like a infinitely renewable energy. Oh, but no, this is just turning into like the plot of Tank Girl.
I haven't seen that.
I recommend it.
All right. So, Whitney, where can people find more of Whitney Reynolds?
You can follow me on Twitter at Whitney Arner. And my podcast is I Haven't Seen That at IHaven'tSeenThat.com, where we talk about things we haven't seen and just have general goofs and revealing of the ignorance with each other. And then my other podcast is Brian Weekly, which is a very short, surreal sketch program. All the episodes are like 6 to 8 minutes. You can listen to it.
Listen to the entire back catalog in one or two commutes?
Yeah, pretty much. So check it out. And I'm also in your heart in a snow globe. Don't release me and send a bunch of kids on some boondoggle. Some goondoggle. Goondoggle! Yes! Nailed it!
Oh, it warms my mermaid heart to hear. Thank you so much, Whitney, for joining us.
Thank you, guys. This is so much fun. I'll do it anytime.
One More Turn is produced, created, and hosted by Jim Staholsky and Kevin King. If you have any comments or questions for us about today's game for Whitney or for us, email us at onemoreturnpodcast@gmail.com. Rate us on iTunes or other popular podcaster sites. If you want to comment to us directly on our Twitter feeds, I am at Yonder Hillside. Jim is
at Fuzziest Kitty.
And Whitney?
Whitney Arner.
IED is courtesy of Pixel Hate off his album, Man the Revolution. You can find more of his music at pixel8shade.co.uk. Blue Paint is courtesy of Breakbeat Heartbeat and the Waveform Generators off Breakbeat's album 2206. You can find more Breakbeat music at soundcloud.com/BreakbeatHeartbeat.
Kevin, what are we going to do next week?
Well, next week, Jim, is dig deep into the deepest cave you can find and find the game you want to play or recommend, because it's show and tell.
But all the ET cartridges are gone. What's left?
Oh, are mermaids cold-blooded or warm-blooded, do you think?
Do they sleep with their eyes open?
Guys, do you think a minotaur would taste like human or taste like beef?
Which half?
Yeah, that's always the question. I never know.
Yeah, flank steak would probably taste like person. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I wonder what the marbling's like on that.
Kobe minotaur.
Does minotaur taste like centaur?
Well, no, because centaur would taste like horse.